Well, Lori did such a good job with statistics that I'm going to just move right through. This is why we developed Project Healthy Schools. We know the statistics that 20% almost of our youth are overweight. And in Michigan, we're not doing so hot either, so we knew that we had to do something. And this is Project Healthy School. This was developed by one of the sixth graders in our project the first year. And we've been here for 3 years now. This is our fourth year of programming. It's a program for sixth graders, and it's designed to increase physical activity and healthier food choices for kids to learn habits that will last them a lifetime. We chose sixth grade because it's a transitional age, and in Michigan we have middle school 6, 7, 8. So it's the year the kids move in to the choices. No longer is the food just set in front of them, but now they can pick it and they're not doing such a hot job picking good stuff. School-based, just as Lori said, 900 hours a year that kids spend in school. They spend a lot of time in school. And you know, after having kids and being a kid yourself, what influence your peers have on you and being and in the school. And the other thing is that typically in public health, we operate out of schools. We've done a lot of great things in schools in public health, so it's a good place for us to be. Our project is based on the socio-ecological model and the rings of influence, and we're hitting one ring. We know there's a lot more where we should be going. And we are a collaborative approach. We have a lot that it was developed to bring the resources of the University of Michigan together with our community to do something about childhood obesity. And so in the process, we brought in a lot of other people, a lot of stakeholders. This busy slide shows all the people involved so far. And right now, we're in two school districts. So, you know, we hope to expand. But you can see that we have the university, we have the health system, and then we have a lot of other groups. I was in a talk this morning where We Can was in there, and we work with We Can. We work with our health department, the Hands-On Museum, just a lot of different partners. These are our five goals: eat more fruits and vegetables, make better beverage choices, perform at least 150 minutes of physical activity a week, and I think that's a little light considering we're giving them a break there. Eat less fast and fatty foods, and spend less mindless time in front of the TV and the computer. All good things for all of us to do, no matter what age we are. These are the three main building blocks of Project Healthy School. It's education, environmental changes, and measurement. We are a research project, so we do a lot of measurement. And the main program components, we have hands-on activities, fitness assemblies, we have an incentive program, we make cafeteria changes, we have an education campaign, and outcome measures. So a little bit more about the education. It's 10 health activities that we offer in advisory period. That's kind of like what used to be the homeroom. And this is one of the things I think that differentiates our program from others, in that we were able to go into the school day as something that's offered. It's not called curriculum, because that's, you can't do that. You have to go to the curriculum committee, and we didn't. But the homeroom is a time when it's not, there's no teacher lesson plan, that's what they're called. And so the school was gracious enough to let us in, so we're constantly trying to make it fit. And all of our lessons were designed around our five goals, to reach the five goals, but also to fit in this 20-minute period so that teachers wouldn't say, you know, we can't do this. This is a little more about the activities. This is some of the topics. So it's just all things that center around the five goals. So the lessons are simple, they're interactive, we have lots of hands-on props, and they're taught by teachers if they'll teach them. We found that after the first year of them saying to us, sure, we'll do that, and then at the end of the year we realized, no, they didn't do it. We had one coordinator in the school, and of course there were like 12 advisory periods, so there's no way that our coordinator could do it all. And if the teachers didn't want to do it, we developed a program called the Health Ambassador Program. So I'm going to talk about that. But we also have volunteer parents, and then we have some staff. This is just a little bit about the incentive program, and it's designed to, you know, keep the kids excited. This has gone through several changes, and we're still looking at what works best because we used to have an online thing, and something happened at the server level, and it got blocked, so half the schools couldn't use it, and you know, so now it's paper pencil. It's the first 3 weeks of the 10-week activities, and there's lots of parties involved. We also do assemblies. We have a kickoff assembly where we just, it's a motivational thing, get kids excited about the programs. And then we have PE activities where, again, the teachers are nice enough to let us come in, and we do some alternative education activities like yoga and Pilates. And I understand from my staff that that's not alternative. And I said, wait a minute, not everybody does it. So I'm going to do a little poll here. How many people in here do yoga and Pilates? Oh, God, there's a lot of people. Maybe it's not alternative anymore. And the Health Ambassador Program, I think this is another unique feature of our project in that we have student volunteers. We first got these volunteers from the medical school, and now we have them from the undergraduate programs at Michigan, Eastern Michigan University, and also we're looking at high school students. So they're wanting to get involved. And we started it last year in order to have a link between the university and the community. And then also, it really gives us an opportunity to extend our program. So these are some of the features that make it useful for the students, that they get training in going out into schools, and they get the opportunity to go in the community. They can also, participate in various data collection things. They can work with teachers. It's a wonderful opportunity, especially anybody in here that's been in a medical-based program knows that lots of medical students never get to see the light of day. So they really appreciate going on the community. And then we also do a monthly seminar education series. Oops, went by that one. Well, that other one just kind of told you that the Health Ambassador Program has given us the opportunity to extend our program to a lot more students, which in the end, to make this a sustainable program, we're hoping that there will be a link, sort of like student teaching is with teaching students. So we're hoping that'll work out. These are the environmental changes and healthy fundraisers. We reinstituted field days, which when I was a kid, we always had field days. And it's been a great experience for the kids. We've made cafeteria changes and things like that. These are some of the cafeteria changes. All I can say about this is lesson learned. You've got to stay on the food service people. Bless their heart, they're trying. But as soon as I walked away from our baked chips, which was my big success, I walked in there the other day and they had one choice of baked chips. And I said, what happened to all the baked chips? And they went, well, this is what they sent us. And when we went to the top and asked them, the food service director said, oh, gosh, I guess a new person's ordering, and it's still on the form, and they just checked it off. And I'm like, because it's such a big deal to us. So you have to stay on them. This is some of the measurements that we do, height and weight, blood pressure, 3-minute step test, a lipid profile, glucose included in the lipid profile, and a before and after questionnaire. Picture of a health screening. And so far, our program results. We've been in 5 schools. There's been 1,250 students, and 581 students are in our biggest cohort that we're going to follow for the next 3 years. So last year's group, we had 581 students that consented to be in the research. And then we've seen that there has been a 10% increase in fruits and vegetables across consumption across the board in all the 5 schools. This is a little bit about the population. We know there's not a lot of diversity here, and this year we are in a new school district, and we're trying our program out with a more diverse population. Pretty much split between male and female. The first year, we saw a decrease in total cholesterol and the serum glucose and the LDL, which was very encouraging. This is 88 students, and we followed them up for 1 year, and it basically stayed the same. They didn't get any better, didn't get any worse. This is just a little bit about the risk factors that we found the second year with 300 students. And the significance of this is just that, you know, we had 40% of the kids had risk factors for heart disease. These are 12-year-olds in a what we consider to be a fairly educated community, but, you know, it's just reflective of the whole country. This was information from the second year. This is that 300-kid group. And again, we saw the decrease in the total cholesterol, in the LDL, in triglycerides, and in random glucose, which was very encouraging that now we're seeing a trend. This is a little bit about the behavior change data. We're seeing that kids are eating less chocolate candy. They're eating more fruit. They're eating twice a day fruit. And they're joining more sports teams. So again, it's a good trend that they're eating better and they're exercising more. And this is the cohort of kids that we're going to follow for the next 3 years. And in this group, again, we saw a decrease in the cholesterol, the total cholesterol. We did see a decrease in the LDL, and it was just barely significant, almost. And we saw a decrease in the glucose, not significant. Triglycerides, we saw another decrease. And again, we're seeing kids joining teams. They're eating more fruit. This one is interesting because they're saying at the end that they're almost always eating in the cafeteria more, which is good fuel if you're trying to get cafeteria changes, because they always say it's going to cost us money and nobody's going to come and eat the stuff. And so that was good for us. They're eating less chocolate candy, they're drinking more milk, they're exercising more. This one is not as successful with the computer. That's a tough one. This is just a picture of our assemblies. This is some kids doing yoga. As a kid in the cafeteria, seemingly enjoying carrots. This was one of our smoothie parties, which was one of the rewards for the incentive program. And this was at the field day. So lessons learned, lots of things. I think with teachers, the comments about, you know, education, each school is so unique. We learned that, and I'm coming from the health angle, from the health system. So I do think you have to have the partners in the schools. There's no doubt about it, and you have to learn that each school is different. You can't go in as a system. The other thing that we found was it was so good to get involved with the teachers down here. We did on-site classes for the teachers, and we did something called a charity challenge where they compete, and they had their own incentive project, so they had little teams, and then they gave money to charity in order to be on the team, and then the team with the most points at the end could choose where the money went, and they loved that. Flexibility, I'm still preaching that to the staff that work for me and to myself, because everything changes. Now, after this great program set up for the past 3 years, they changed our middle school structure so that now we don't have the homeroom time that we had. So we had to change everything again. And I also think that linking activities to outcomes that schools care about is important. The Health Ambassador Program has been great, and these are just some things that we learned about the Health Ambassador Program. And the bottom here is when you have students provide a lot of food. Even if you have adults provide a lot of food, because that'll make them come to your meetings. And this is our motto, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed people can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. So I encourage all of you to go out there and join the fight.
next speaker is Lynn Hayes Trenta, who is going to speak about coordinated school health programs in Southeast Texas school districts.
Introduced to the concept of the Coordinated School Health Program and the theory of diffusion of innovation in my public health nutrition class as a graduate student, and found them both intriguing. And later, as a part of a short-term graduate fellowship, I came across organizational theory and also found this intriguing. And these concepts were the inspiration for this study. Okay, my study objectives were to assess perceived barriers and facilitators to the Coordinated School Health Program implementation by the school district in Texas, and to assess the organizational capacity that they had to implement the Coordinated School Health Programs, and also to examine the relationship between the Coordinated School Health Program adoption and perceptions of the study participants. Okay, my presentation objectives are to outline the Coordinated School Health Program model and its benefits, and describe the legislation that requires the Southeast Texas school districts to adopt the Coordinated School Health Programs in Texas, and describe the theories guiding the research study. I will report the methods, results, strengths, and limitations of the study, and discuss the state support for the Coordinated School Health Programs and School Health Advisory Councils, as well as future Coordinated School Health Program evaluation research. And then I'll summarize the study's purpose and future Coordinated School Health Programs research in the Texas. And we've already gone over the Coordinated School Health Program model, and it has the 8 components, four of which are part of the Texas school Coordinated School Health Programs that are required, and they have been found effective in improving health knowledge, health behaviors, and health outcomes. And 2 studies actually did come up with the health outcomes. The Trevino in 2004, they had a study that was called Bienestar was a Coordinated School Health Program, and it reduced blood sugar. And in 2005, Coleman et al. Found that they did decrease the BMI using CATCH, which is a coordinated approach to child health, which is a coordinated school health program. Okay, these are the 3 bills. We're coming at it from a different angle than the other 2 speakers about the coordinated school health programs. The Texas legislature has required that all the school districts do implement a coordinated school health program, and they had to be adopted by May 2007, as well as the School Health Advisory Council. And the School Health Advisory Councils are actually the connection to the community, because there are community members on the School Health Advisory Council. And also they required 135 minutes of physical activities per week. The other Senate bills that were required, that had to do with coordinated school health programs, were 1357 in 2003, and that required the Texas Education Agency provide coordinated school health programs had been found effective in reducing cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and obesity. And it provided for the evaluation of coordinated school health programs. Senate Bill 42 expanded the program to the middle schools and junior high schools, and required forming a state SHAC, which is School Health Advisory Council, and that supports the school district councils. Okay, the theories that supported my project, or our anyway, were diffusion of innovation, and I felt that this fit what was happening in Texas because it's usually diffusion innovation has to do with an individual or a group adopting an innovation over a period of time, whereas in Texas it actually fits into the category of diffusion of innovation in organizations where the decision is made by the organization and not the individual or group. So I thought this fit very well with what was happening in Texas. And I wanted to test and see what the perceptions were of the people who were going to be adopting it. And these are the different constructs: relative advantage, compatibility, adaptability, and complexity. The other two theories were health belief model. Some of the constructs are susceptibility, benefit, barriers, self-efficacy, and complexity in adopting these coordinated school health programs. And the social cognitive theory emphasizes the interrelationship between the individual and the environment. This is the diffusion innovation adopter categories. For my study, I simplified it to early adopters, majority adopters, and laggard. Oh, not laggards. Who wants to be a laggard? late adopters. I was looking at the organizational capacity of the school districts, and I divided that into the climate, which was resources, funds, and personnel, culture, which was the attitudes and assumptions that were in the school districts, such as the support from parents, teachers, administration, and students, and that together was the organizational capacity, which I was looking to see if it affected the school district's ability to implement effective school health programs. And my study questionnaire was modified from a coordinated approach to child health questionnaire. It was originally administered to individual schools, and I adapted it to school districts. It was entered into Zoomerang.com internet site for data collection May to June 2006. And it evaluated the perceptions of the school district personnel about adopting and implementing the innovation, which was coordinated school health program. In order to contact my subjects, I sent letters to the school districts and requested that the person who was best able to represent their school district in terms of health complete the survey. And I followed that up with phone calls and emails, and I provided the website to the participants through email letter. And for data analysis, the Zoomerang.com site actually it tabulated percentages for the different questions. I combined summary scores for five constructs and evaluated and categorized them as high or low, and then I compared those to the adoption and adopter categories. I used SPSS for descriptive analysis and STATA for the chi-square analysis. The results were that the summary scores were predominantly high, with time, resources, and training being the biggest barriers. 79% of the school districts had adopted a coordinated school health program, and this was a year before it was required, and 97% had formed a school health advisory councils. The chi-square analysis found that there was no significant relationships between the summary scores and the adoption, or between the summary scores and adopter categories. The most significant relationship was found between importance and coordinated school health adoption. Okay, the strengths of the study were the internet-based questionnaire, which provided confidentiality and convenience for respondents, and it did support the analysis. The response rate was 58%, and it was a timely and relevant topic because they still had not been required to be adopted. Okay, limitations, and I was thinking that one of the main limitations was self-report. I didn't put this on there, but I think that was one of the main limitations. It was a small sample size, and the sensitivity of the questionnaire might have been a little bit low. It could have been more sensitive in picking up heterogeneity of the subjects. It was superintendents, SHAC coordinators, nurses, curriculum directors, and others. And it was a complex and difficult concept to measure, and it's more difficult to evaluate it when it's mandated. We're looking definitely at the other end of the stick, so to speak, when it comes to implementing coordinated school health programs. Because there is support for these programs out there. There's the Texas School Health Network, and that coordinates, it's the Texas Department of Health Services, the Texas Cancer Society Association, and there's one more aspect of that. The support for the SHACs, one of the support for the School Health Advisory Councils is a state school, a state health advisory council that is there to support the school district ones. And they we have evaluation procedures that will be undertaken by the Michael and Susan Dell Center for the Advancement of Healthy Living by the University of Texas School of Public Health in Austin. And that's Dr. Deanna Helscher is the director, and she actually was participating in this study, although her name wasn't on there. She's developing evaluation tools for the Coordinated School Health Program, and that's the website right there. So, and in summary, the Coordinated School Health Programs were mandated through legislation to be adopted and implemented by May 2007. This study looked at the perceptions of the school district's health representatives as to how they viewed the school district's abilities to implement the coordinated school health programs. And the study is a pilot study that evaluated organizational capacity in regards to school health. And the Michaels and Susan Dell Center at the University of Texas School of Public Health will be evaluating implementation fidelity to evaluate if they are following what they're doing, what they're supposed to be doing. And the organizational capacity may most likely